Hello?
Lou.
Hello, this is Leonard.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Men's Spiritual Radio Hour with Mike Snyder and Mark Rawson here on Spiritual Connections Radio.
Everybody, it's Mark Ross, and I'd like to welcome you to another night of the Men's Spiritual Radio Hour. Had a very interesting way of starting the show today. My laptop decided it was going to update 34,000 patches or something like that. So got into the show in the last second, so we didn't have a lot of chance to do the normal prep we do on the show. But I'd like to welcome everybody to the show. As you know, we're on once a month on Spiritual Connections Radio, me and Mike. Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Yeah, so we were doing the scramble at the last minute. It's funny because I'm usually the one that's kind of like, I don't like when people show up at the show in the last 5 minutes, you know. So I had to get into another computer, and then I couldn't remember the password to get in the console. So all kinds of good fun, but. We like to welcome everybody to the show. As you know, we're on once a month, and we always have a man come on and talk about his spiritual journey, some of the experiences he's had in life, and stuff like that. So me and Mike started the show. What do you think, Mike? Was it about 2 years ago?
Yeah, pretty close to that.
Yeah, so it's been an amazing good run, and we've enjoyed being on every month. And if you want to find out more about this show and the other shows, you can go to our website, which is spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn this over to Mike so he can introduce our guest.
Okay, so today we'd like to welcome Leonard Goodwin to the show. And Leonard is a retired professor and social psychologist who resides with his wife outside Nashville, Tennessee. He taught at Earlham College and was on the staff of Fulbright Exchange Program and the Brookings Institute in Washington, D.C. He also served as professor and head of the Department of Social Science and Policy Studies at Worcester Polytech Institute. And he's published numerous articles in the following books: Poor Want to Work, A Social Psychology Study of Work Orientations, Can Social Science Help Resolve National Problems, Causes and Cures of Welfare. And his poetry's also appeared in a number of publications. And also we're going to talk about Echoes in the Universe, a spiritual memoir, also by Leonard Goodwin. So Leonard, it's great to have you on the show today. Welcome, and sorry for a little bit of the confusion here in the beginning. Usually you don't have the technical difficulties.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, it's great having you on the show, and welcome. We had a research department looking for really good people to bring on the show, and we made contact with your publicist, and we were able to connect the dots, and we're really excited to have you on the show this evening. So thank you for being here.
Oh, well, I'm glad to do that and share my experiences. These glitches, I think, are due to negative forces in the universe that are rampant right now.
Yeah, and unprepared radio people who should be starting a few minutes before the show starts. I think there's certain aspects where there's certain things that are different energies, and I think there's certain things where it is what it is. So
well, we're certainly going through a time of a lot of energetic changes, and it's not unusual to get a lot of glitches going on, I think, in the electronic people's lives.
Uh-huh. Yeah, generally the one that everybody likes to blame is retro, what is that called, Mike? Mercury retrograde?
Retrograde, yeah.
Yeah, that's generally what everybody likes to blame everything on. So
well,
I don't know
blame
if I can.
Well, St. Patty's Day today.
yeah. I probably had a little leprechaun inside of my laptop messing around.
There you go.
Well, I was born during Mercury retrograde, so I can attest to its negative powers.
So, I don't know. Where do you want to start? Why don't you start from the beginning and how you got started, and we'll just kind of let the story unfold from there.
Well, I think one of the useful things about my book, Echoes in the Universe, is that it's a memoir that starts, at the beginning of my lifetime when I'm totally unaware of anything spiritual. And I think, like many people, I grew up looking to career. I mean, a male especially does that. And it wasn't until later in life that I became aware of spiritual issues. At the same time, in writing this book, it's partly about a spiritual adventure. It's partly about looking back at a time that most people are not aware of. Since I was born during the Great Depression, life was very different. And so a part of the book has to do with an exploration of what life was like in those earlier days. And we've sort of forgotten about that. And I think for young people especially, it's important to become aware of what their history was, or the history before the modern times. It's also written in a form that's a little unusual. I've chosen to write it in the form of narrative poems. And people don't read poetry these days in general, but these are sort of little vignette stories that start with the Great Depression, move up through times like the 1939 New York World's Fair, into the Second World War, the time when Franklin Roosevelt was president, up until, the present time. But so it gives a picture of life in those earlier times. And I think the advantage of that is that spiritual development for some, like myself, just doesn't occur from birth. It's a later development, and one that now is, I think, of a special importance, given all the chaos that seems to be going on in the world. So I think it's a useful document to read, and it's written in narrative poetry because I think that gives a vignette of what life was like. It sort of concentrates the effect. But what I might do is start by just reading a short part of the prologue to the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be really nice. I wanted to make one comment because I agree with you. I know from my own personal experience, it wasn't until I turned 45 that I, quote unquote, as far as I'm concerned, got into my spirituality. I had come from a Baptist background and did a lot of years in what I would consider the dogma-based church structure. And it wasn't until I got into my later years that that I actually started to do spirituality. I can look back in hindsight and say there was certain markers along the path of certain things that happened. But as far as just kind of diving both feet in and really going through the different spirituality, phases and stuff like that, it didn't happen until I was older. And I think for a lot of people who listen to the show and a lot of people in spirituality, I think it's the same. And I also believe it's more so with men. And I think that's because men generally come into spirituality slower, at a slower pace and a slower adoption of it. Versus women. I think me and Mike can testify to the fact that, if you even go back 5 years ago, we would go to certain retreats or, training classes or studying with certain gurus around the world, and you'd be like one guy in a group of 200 women. Now if you go five years later, now you have probably, 20 guys for every 200 women. So I think it's a an interesting thing, what do you think about that?
Well, yes, that's been my experience in teaching, at college, is that these guys would have spiritual experiences and they would deny it because it wasn't part of the culture that, the time to admit to having these kinds of things. It wasn't acceptable. So I think men are slow learners in this in this realm. And yet it's important for them to, and that's one of the purposes of my book, is just to awaken people in general, but men in particular, to look at their experiences and recognize that some of these are spiritual experiences and they might well go deeper into it and not just ignore it.
Mm-hmm. Now, before you do that introduction reading, which I'm really looking forward to, Mike, did you have a question?
No, not yet. I'd like to hear some of the context of the book he was talking about first.
Okay, go ahead, Leonard.
Well, I start this with the idea of let me just read part of it. This volume recounts my adventures in everyday living as child, husband, father, teacher, researcher, within the context of major social events ranging from the Great Depression, World War II, the War on Poverty, to election of a black president, and time beyond the Mayan calendar. It also recounts my adventures in spiritual awareness as I discover later in life that I'm more than a physical body and a transmitter of energy to the earth from the sound angel realm. By the way, knowing where we come from is a major, major event if one discovers that. That's sort of part of a narrative poem, but then I also intersperse this with what I call spiritually oriented poems, and this is part of the prologue. As we learn to welcome all aspects of life, storms and beauties of nature, personal pleasures and strife, we'll find our human form does more than first appears. Our form can resonate and dance to music of the spheres, can dream of new creations that benefit all beings and broaden cosmic consciousness beyond the bounds now seen. And then I remark, this volume is a reminder that each of us is on a spiritual adventure that's grounded in the earth and echoes in the universe. And I think that's the key here to my approach and thinking, is that we, each of us, is important, not just to our family and friends, but that we have a connection to the universe. And that's part of our gift and part of our burden and part of our difficulty, is that what we do, what we think, and how we develop affects the entire universe. And that's really trying to bring that message through. And while I talk about my experiences, I think each of us has a role in this universal development.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. It's very beautiful. Very, very powerful also. And that comes from your book. Does that come from Echoes in the Universe, right?
Yes, right.
And where can people find that book?
It's on Amazon, Amazon.com. It's also on Kindle. And I have a website, LeonardGoodwin.com.
Thank you for giving that out. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, that was very beautiful. And I'm actually looking on your website now, and I see another excerpt from your book that you have, the one that says, "White light is radiating from the wall. I sense myself moving toward the wall out of curiosity. Then comes a message not in words but as a knowingness. You've done enough in the earth plane and are free to leave for home by walking through the wall of light. And wow, I just noticed that now, and I really like that. So with using that as an example, have you had a lot of great feedback from the book in that, you know, we seem to be in a time where everybody is kind of searching for their spirituality. And like we've been talking about earlier too, men especially, it might even be a little more difficult for us to dive into our spirituality and balance our life in the kind of like the ego that we have to keep on, you know, in order to fill the male role in society. You know, sometimes we can't show so much weakness, and unfortunately, you know, in this country, sometimes strong spirituality can show a little weakness in the male ego persona, you know, so be it. So what I'm curious about is your book, since you have a lot of the excerpts in poetry form, have you found that it has reached people in a different way? Because not everybody reads books, not everybody can read books and process, you know, sometimes if it's hard to pay attention to things, or sometimes if a book's too scientific or telling you what to do too much, it might not process as much as something as a poem, which I see that you've done here, where, you know, like I said, this one I just read about the white light really stands out to me in a way that in a poetry form, it almost affects me more than it would have as rather than you just saying it straight out, this is what happens.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Where I'm living now with my wife, this is an active adult community. And a number of people here who've read this find that they can actually sit down and read this, whereas they don't read a lot. But this is sort of concentrated and brief, you know, in poetic form. And it has an advantage of bringing the essence of it forward without having to go through a lot of words that people... I might read that part, go back a little. This is a near-death experience. And this occurs later in life. It's about 18 years ago now. And it's a heart attack I had, came totally out of the blue, and I was literally struck down with two iron fists on each side of my chest. Many people have arm attacks. This was a real heart attack. We were living in the Blue Ridge Mountains. It was an hour and 20 minutes to get to the hospital. I lost 30-40% of my heart function. But let me, and then had a second heart attack in the hospital, and then had this experience. And let me just read part of it. You've quoted a little bit of it. I'm back in my hospital room. I've just had the second heart attack. I'm in despair over this turn of events. I lean back on the hospital bed, raised halfway to facilitate my breathing. Close my eyes, hoping to sleep as daylight fades. Instead, I become aware of seeing the opposite wall through my closed eyelids. White light is radiating from the wall. I sense myself moving toward the wall out of curiosity. Then comes a message, not in words, but as knowingness. You've done enough on the earth plane, are free to leave for home by walking through the wall of life, the wall of light. I feel myself moving closer to the wall, but then the message continues. Once on the other side, you will not return. I suddenly realize this is a near-death experience and understand that once on the other side, the pull of home, the sense of overwhelming love will be so strong there'll be no turning back. While still considering my options, further information arrives. If you stay, your heart function will be restored. All you need do in life is be yourself. I'm aware I've made no preparation for my departure, financial or otherwise. Jerry and my children would be distraught by my abandonment. I also have a strong sense, in spite of this message, there are important things yet to do on earth. I stop before the wall of light, decide to stay on this side. Then, totally unexpected, comes a further message. about an unexpected figure, one who is in my lineage, but appropriated by Christians. The message is that Jesus came as a spiritual teacher to demonstrate how human beings can maintain an open, fully functioning, loving heart that embraces all living beings in spite of experiencing the worst of earthly terrors. And then I go on, I open my eyes. That experience came totally out of the blue with no expectation, no training of, that I was getting into it. And it's the kind of thing that for me, I can get into at times when times are right, but I can't call it up, voluntarily. I'd also go on to say that you have to watch these messages you get. It said my heart function would be returned. Well, when I go to the cardiologist, he sees he gets very excited. I've lost 30% of my heart function. However, when I did a treadmill test a year after this event, I was doing better than normal for my age. So functionally, I got my heart function back, but not literally. I'd also point out it took me a year or more, 2 years, to really integrate this experience and to fully come back and integrate it into my life. So I think people might think having spiritual experiences, is fun. Well, it is, but it requires some work and effort and reintegration into your life. And my understanding of what I got the message about Jesus, which is a little different than the fundamentalist message, it's not contrary, but it's a little different. It's that he came as a human to show it's possible to have an open heart in the midst of all this trouble and chaos and torture, that we have on the earth. What I've later come to understand, and I would make this a really key point, because we talk about battling evil, and in a sense we battle it, but my experience with negative spiritual energies is that rather than battle it, you raise your own energy level and you transcend it. And you take away the power of the negative forces by not fighting them on their territory. You develop a level of understanding. And I think that's one of the things that Jesus came to talk about, of bringing heaven on earth, is that you integrate your spiritual level to a level where the negative forces are diminished, because they live off of your negativity. And if you adopt their own negativity, you sort of play into their hands.
Hmm. So, I guess the question I have for you as you share the story, do you really consider that your spiritual journey started before or after the heart attack?
Oh, it started a number of years before. I would have been in my 50s, and I was developing hypertension, and I got into biofeedback and then into Buddhist meditation. And my first spiritual experience was in a Buddhist meditation. There's a group of Americans that developed a Buddhist center in Barre, Massachusetts, and I was teaching at Worcester Polytech, a few miles away. And that was my first experience of connection with the whole. So I had been on this path, but I did not expect to have a heart attack.
So, a lot of people who are in spirituality, they look at different catalysts. Like a couple of my friends, they've been in car accidents that almost killed them, and they, they went over and they had the near-death experience and stuff like that. And for some of them, you know, the near-death experience was them coming back with extra gifts or extra awakening or a lot of just, you know, after that, the spiritual journey really accelerated. Did you notice any big changes after your near-death experience about, I guess, number one, your view of life in general, and then secondly, just your spiritual growth?
Well, one major sense was, you know, people talk a lot about dying, and death, you know, it seems to be a big issue. And my experience was, for me, death would be just walking through a doorway. It's one of the things I got out of it, is that I think we make a big thing of death in our culture because it seems unknown, and it seems unknown because we're spiritually immature, and that it's not that it's not a big deal as a transition, but it is a transition, and it's not, it's part of our total life experience, not just our life in this plane. Yeah, and I certainly got that sense of that death is not something to be not talked about and avoided. It's it also, I think, brings up the issue for me, and one reason I didn't want to go, and it's been shown since I've done a number of things since that was 18 years ago, and I have that there are things you really want to accomplish while you're on this physical plane because you can't do it on the spiritual plane. So while you're here, don't waste your time doing a lot of superficial things, when if you find out what your purpose is, there are some key things. And to me, the most frustrating thing would be to go on the other side, not to die, but to go on the other side and look back and see what you could have done, but you didn't do because you were unaware or weren't making use of your awareness.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think you bring up a good point, and one that no one really in the spiritual field has ever talked about. And that is, in your own opinion, I mean, what is the big difference between what you can accomplish here versus the other side?
Well, here you're in a physical body. You can move things and do things on the earth plane. And it's my sense what we do in the physical realm has an impact in the entire universe. And we can't do that on the spiritual plane. I mean, we do other things on a spiritual plane, but the idea that the spiritual plane is all, you know, so much above the physical plane, it is in a way. In the other way, it doesn't have the potential that you have here for doing on the physical plane. For example, as people physically develop this love and acceptance and are able to transcend the hate and the limitations in their physical life, this affects the entire universe. And you can't do it on this if you're just a spirit because you don't have that challenge. But I would look upon the troubles we have on the earth plane much like in the book of Job, where Satan is the challenger, that we are challenged to work on this plane. And that has a deep spiritual meaning over and above the spirit, you know, being in the spiritual part. And the trick is to bring in our spiritual nature and understandings to the physical plane and make these changes on the physical plane as best we can, which is often discouraging.
Mm. Wow. Well, thank you for that, because I don't think any, you know, I've studied in many different areas and a lot of different areas of spirituality, and I don't think anybody has ever talked to that subject, so that's pretty incredible. And I think the closest I've ever seen is that, you know, there is this general understanding that if you want to actually taste, feel, you know, experience that, you know, even though you can manifest things on the other side, you can't truly taste a glass of wine or a sweet grape or a cherry or something along those lines. And I've also heard the comparison, this comes from Newton, Journey of Souls, and the life between life experience, documentation, and materials. says that, you know, you can, on the other side, you can be in, you know, quote unquote earth school, where, you know, you can read about how cold it is in the Arctic or how cold the winters are. It's almost like studying a book and reading, but to truly experience it, you have to come down in human form and actually experience the weather, experience the coldness, and, you know, the survival or the feeling or the energy or the need for extra food or nurturing, and in that space that you can't fully experience on the other side. So really, really good explanation. So thank you for that.
Yeah, you know, you can get into the part of spirituality where you deny the physical, and maybe that's okay for some people, you know, maybe that's their path. But I think there's this other path of dealing with the physical, and it's my sense, what I got from that message that I got about Jesus, is that what he was trying to talk about, is dealing with the physical.
I do truly believe, you know, that the, go ahead.
Well, as a spiritual adventure, and that not to just try to get away from the physical, but to exploit, maybe isn't the word, to make use of it in its spiritual nature.
Yeah, there's a teacher I've been following. His name is Matt Kahn, and he kind of makes a little bit of a joke of that. He says, you know, we come down here, you know, from pure energy, we come into existence, into a body, and we manifest spirit in body. And he, you know, he kind of makes a joke of it and says, okay, thank you, God, for creating this body. Now I'm going to ignore it. And I'm going to get into the spiritual posture of totally disconnecting myself from my physical form so I can be spiritual again. You know, so, you know, it's funny, you know, the true nature of it, I think you had said it earlier, is just really, like you said, after your near-death experience, and that is to just come here and be, you know, to just be who we are and, you know, let that experience unfold. And with that, let me go ahead. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a couple comments to add to that, too, and the two different ones I have on the subject of, you know, life on the other side. This past year, I finished reading a popular book that I know I've talked to you about before, Mark, which is called The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. And it's a really great book where the woman who becomes the author, her brother dies in a tragic accident. She's in Massachusetts, he's in Florida. And, you know, they were close over the years, and then they grew apart and everything. And he had a pretty rough life. He went in and out of, you know, drug abuse and things like that, but he always had like this very heartwarming side of him. But anyhow, to make a long story short, once she finds out he's in this horrible accident, she's guided over time with all these messages she keeps getting from him from the other side to write this book. And, you know, reading the book, it was wonderful because she, in the book, puts all these messages that she got directly from him and him describing, which is, you know, he said it's a very rare case that that somebody that passes over can communicate so clearly, you know, to somebody in the physical. But his experiences of him looking down in review of his life, his experiences of floating through the universe, you know, his experiences of becoming mass consciousness and not having a physical body, you know, and slowly what regrets he had starts to go away as he becomes, you know, merged into the oneness. And it was just a really eye turning book because, it's exactly what you said. You know, you really do have so much you can do here in the physical that you can't do on the other side. And it's, you know, everything happens for a reason, but yet, you know, we do have free will, you know, to carry things out. And with that, you know, I'd like to get to my second point, which is, I'm sure you're probably both familiar with an author named Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a very famous Buddhist author.
Yes.
And I've been exploring some of his books, in particular, Pieces in Every Breath is the one that I've been working on lately. And, you know, what I really love about his concept and the concept of Buddhism is, you know, why we are here in the present, why we are here in the physical, instead of us having to be in such a rush all the time and letting life pass us by and being in a state of worry, if we just focus on mindfulness, if we just focus on putting our focus on what we're doing in the present moment, even if we're just, you know, brushing our teeth or just making our breakfast, or if we're talking to another person, you know, how often can we actually do that and really give the respect and the attention to the other person instead of playing on our smartphone, you know, stuff like that, you know. And I've really just loved reading his book, because that is my life, you know, being an IT and computer guy and just on the run all the time and hectic this and hectic that, and, you know, even doing my spiritual work and still trying to fit everything in. And, you know, what I've learned is if you don't slow down and be mindful, you just get sick. You crash into a brick wall. And it's happened to me every so often where, you know, you get sick and you have no choice but to slow down. So, you know, in contrast with both of those concepts, it's just amazing when you look at the big picture. It's like, well, maybe I shouldn't think I need to put things off for another life or wait till I get to the other side. I need to enjoy the present moment now and just realize each moment is a gift, you know, and stay in that divine connection, you know, whether the person believes in Jesus or Buddha or whoever they're, whoever they look up to, you know, I think it's just so important.
Also, it gives you an opportunity to see opportunities that might pass you by. Let me give you a specific example. See, I had this heart attack in 1997, so it was about 18 years ago. In 2011, one of the psychic people I worked with, Patricia Fields, and a dozen of us, were called to go to Rome to open up an energy portal. And this is in my book. It's toward the end of the book. An energy portal under the Vatican that, and this is 2011, that was set up by the Etruscans, who were a spiritual group, you know, prior to the Romans. And I have in there my experience of participating in the opening of this energy field. And not coincidentally, you have a pope, and this energy field allows for, you might say, universality. And here you have this pope coming in, living in that energy field now, making use of it to do something on the earth plane, which has wide spiritual effects, you know, throughout the world and spiritually. So at times you may have opportunities, you know, to participate in things which you might miss if you're too busy. And there's an example of trying to transform the physical, social, physical world by the current pope, which is sort of itself sort of miraculous. But that's not the only other part. What's not in the book, so I'm having to write some other things, that, let's see, it was August of last year. So I was diagnosed with stage 2 rectal cancer. And that also came as a surprise. You know, why should I get that? And I went through some radiation treatment, but also through some spiritual work. And by February of this current year, that cancer had totally disappeared as if it had never existed. And what I have, the information I've gotten is that this was an experience for me on how to materialize and dematerialize in the physical world. So events that occur that look like disasters can be opportunities if you know how to take advantage of them. As I say, that isn't, I have to continue the book. Some other things have happened since I've written it also that I need to write about.
Yeah, I always find that amazing when certain experiences happen in our lives, and, you know, when we're going through it, we don't understand why, and it seems so horrendous. But when we come out to the light at the end of the tunnel, and, you know, and we're okay on the other side, it's like it's a gift to us that we survived it, or, and like, especially in your case, that it, like you said, it was as if it never existed. But it's like, it almost like it, then it gives us that expectation that we have to share it with others so they know that, you know, it's possible in their lives too, or that these things do happen. You know what I mean? It's, you know, miracles do happen, and it's something that maybe you rarely hear about it in the news here or there, but, you know, it's something that when it's shared and people have that in their consciousness and know that it's happened to other people, it can give them hope for themselves. Because I really think the power of intention is such a very, very powerful tool that, can really be like step one in any kind of healing process when you really want to get better. So that helps open up the portal of the universe to help allow you to get better. You see what I mean?
Yeah, and, you know, it may be that you're not scheduled to get better, but it's coming to an understanding of what the purpose is of these things. Now, the doctors that I was dealing with, the odds were that after this radiation, maybe the tumor would have decreased by 50%. Okay. When they saw it was just not just totally gone, but it had rebuilt the wall where, you know, the tumor had been. So they were amazed. But our medical people in general are not oriented spiritually. So they're amazed, but they don't look to other possibilities as to what was going on there. And so you have to do that on your own, since our medical profession in general, not, I mean, there are those in the medical profession who do have a spiritual orientation, but as you say, intention has a lot to do with it. It's sort of been masked under what they call the placebo effect, but the fact is that people's minds have this tremendous power when it comes to materializing or dematerializing. But I would say one of my spiritual approaches with the cancer, as I mentioned before, was not, for me, not to fight it, but to transform it. And so the practices I was using was how to transform what was a negative growth into a normal growth. And that way, I wasn't involved for myself in a battle with this thing, but with a kind of trying to develop, what is transformation about for myself and for the material world? And I think at the moment, we're just so involved in the ideology of conflict as getting rid of the other person. You know, if somebody threatens you, you kill them or do something to annihilate them. And my sense is, in the spiritual world, that does not work very well. The more you bring that energy in, the more you enhance the negativity, instead of trying either to transform it or transcend from it. And that can be done on the physical level, and you can do it on the spiritual level, but doing it on the earth plane, in the physical realm, as I think the current Pope is trying to do, has tremendous ramifications for the spiritual realm, the universe. I might quote from one of my poems here.
Yes, please do.
It's talking about here about the negative forces in the universe, and that they resist, that when we try to bring light and love and interconnection, I believe there are negative forces that try to bring separation, mistrust, fear, and that they will resist change on the spiritual level, and they influence a lot of people, human people, who will resist this change. I say this resistance challenges those of us who serve the forces of light to redouble our effort to initiate a new holistic stage of human development by fostering interconnection, trust, love within the families, institutions, communities we inhabit. This is not a classic battle between good and evil where we attempt to destroy the opposition. This is an effort to perfect ourselves to the point where we radiate in our everyday lives a high level of spiritual light and understanding that resonates with the inner light and understanding of others, attracts them to a higher spiritual view of their lives, from which they recognize how negative forces can distract them from their spiritual goals, misdirect and sap their creative powers. Negative forces are not annihilated in this process, but their power to mislead is depleted as people choose to follow the path of interconnection, trust, and love. The move toward a holographic worldview comes for some of us as we near the end of our earthly careers. For others, it comes at the beginning, allowing them greater opportunity to promote the manifestation of new creations that echo in the universe. Now, I gather some of the work you people do actually gives people techniques. I don't provide techniques in my book. It's really trying to raise their consciousness so they will seek out. And there are places to go to seek out this broader understanding.
Yeah, I agree. That's just it. Just really, there really is something to everybody finding what works for them, you know. And I really like how you present the material because it really does give people kind of that opening of their consciousness to let things flow through to them in their own way, you know. And there is a lot of things in life, which telling people to do things a certain way, do this, do that, but sometimes our mind, you know, when we're given a concept and given the freedom to think about what we want to do in processing that concept, it can be pretty amazing, you know, what we come up with.
Yeah, and I think the value of you know, America and the attraction of American society was that it has this idea of individual development. And rather than trying to superimpose, you know, an autocratic block on everything, I think it recognizes here, or this is part of our heritage, that each individual has a value. And I think spiritually, each individual has a place and a role. And finding that is not easy in the secular world. And in a sense, my book is sort of trying to illustrate how somebody like myself, who came up in a scientific mode and had no spiritual interest at all, by paying attention to some things, came to some, you know, some awareness of what I came here to do, who I was, and what I came here to do.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, you know, what I really like about the show is the fact that you've been sharing these different readings from your book. So go ahead and tell everybody about your book and how they can find it and give out your website again, please.
Yes, it's called Echoes in the Universe, a Spiritual Memoir. It's available on Amazon.com. It's also available in Kindle. And I have a website that's leonardgoodwin.com. I haven't updated it recently. I need to, since I've been doing the cancer bit. I've not had a chance to get back to it. And I would, it has in it a lot of personal stories about the dogs we've had as a younger person. And as I say, the experiences of a different time. You know, just to lighten this up a little, or I don't know if it lightens it, but I have I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, where the Dodgers were then a ball club. I might just read Confessions of a Fan. To us kids in Brooklyn, the Dodgers were more than a ball club. They personified efforts of those who were trying hard with scant resources, like scrappy Leo DeRocher. The opposite and ultimate enemy was the well-heeled, successful, arrogant Yankees. The year the Dodgers won the pennant was a miraculous year. We were proud, but deep down feared the Yankees would finally triumph. When Mickey Owen dropped the ball on the third strike and the batter ran to first, and the Yankees went on to win the game in the World Series, it was a calamity like losing a war. It cast doubt on our own future success, but we returned for other games, won and lost. When the Dodgers left Brooklyn for the West, it seemed a traitorous act, although I know there were good reasons. Today I'll watch a game with interest, but there's no way to match the fervor that used to be. This was when baseball was really a local scene and there weren't million-dollar contracts. And
wow.
So there are a series of poems, you know, to deal with baseball and say the dogs we've had and family life. And I think the value of that is it's not that different from other people. It's a different era, and it's an era I think people might be interested in knowing about. But it's all part of the prelude to finding out who you are.
You know, we always like to ask our guests one question before we end the show, and we're actually at the end of our show now. And that is, can you share with us what is the biggest lesson in life that you've learned?
The biggest lesson is pay attention. Pay attention to what is happening. You mentioned, you know, about the Buddhist mindfulness. That's the program I studied with. And pay attention to the people around you, what they're saying. Even if you like it, don't just react to it. Listen carefully, especially to the ones who are closest to you, like your children or your spouse, to hear what they're really trying to say so that you can be helpful, not in giving them advice, but in giving them space to allow them to explore what's going on, and do not rush into judgment and negativity. That's, I think, the biggest weapon negative forces have is they encourage us into rash judgment and losing our temper and not listening, not hearing, not listening just to what the words are, but to what's behind it and what people are searching for. And I think if we do, we'll find a lot of people are searching for higher levels and they don't know how to get there.
I want to just ask you to expand on something for a minute. You had said that sometimes it's listening to people to understand that you need to give them space so that they can discover what they need to discover. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, I would. As a teacher, I was in the area of social psychology, but in general, my faculty members, I was head of the department, if a student wasn't interested in their particular specialty, they forgot about the student. Now, instead of listening to the student who might want to leave your major and go somewhere else and do something else, they cut them off because they've lost interest, because rather than looking at this person as a spiritual being who is struggling to find their way, they look at them as a means to their own ends. And it's sort of to suspend your own preferences and make it possible for people to express, because it's very hard to express what's going on with you when you think people are making judgments about you and will reject you and you'll lose your job. You know, if you tell your boss, you know, you're really not interested in this field, well, you'll get fired perhaps. So there aren't many places where you can really talk about what's really going on. And I think that's one of our tasks in spiritual development, is to be able to listen to people giving them the space to explore without making judgments or bringing down, you know, you're going to be fired or lose your job.
That's really powerful. Thank you for sharing that. All right. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's very difficult to do, and it requires your own mindfulness as to watching your own reactions and not imposing them on other people, your reactions, but listening to what they have to say and allowing them space. And that creates, I think, a gratefulness on other people's part and a learning on how to do it. Most of us haven't learned very well how to really listen to others.
Well, thank you for being on the show, and we've given out the website and everything. If anybody missed it, you can go to our website, which is spiritualconnectionsradio.com, and you'll see the link for his website and everything, and his bio, and how you can find out more information. So, Mike, thanks as always. Love having you on as the co-host.
Oh, thank you, and it was a pleasure to interview you tonight, Leonard.
Yeah, I really appreciate you're having me on your program. It's great.
Excellent. Thank you for being on the show, and I'll say goodnight to both of you.
Okay. Night.
All right, everybody. You've been listening to the Men's Spiritual Hour on Spiritual Connections Radio. We're on once a month, and you can find out more about our show by going to spiritualconnectionsradio.com. Good night, everybody.
Good night.